All right. Hello and welcome to our speech on the introduction to subliminal media. We're the mobster.net crew, and I begin by introducing ourselves.
You want to know where? What do you?
Let's do it.
I'm Sodium. I work for a auto manufacturer that isn't in Michigan, and I like to download porn.
My name's Top Hat, and I'm a new media designer.
My name is Technologic. I'm a web design consultant for a mid-sized web design and hosting firm.
My name is Xanax, and I am a CAO administrator for a grocery firm, which is computer-assisted ordering.
He just made that up.
And I make porn.
Well, I'm Trey Sir. I'm a security specialist for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Actually, I am.
He is. Swear to God. Got hooked up.
Bullshit.
And if you want any Cisco routers.
Going like hotcakes.
All right.
Damn, there's a lot of people in here.
Let's begin a speech. Can you guys hear me all right?
What? Step up.
All right. The idea that individuals can be controlled without their awareness goes far back into history. Ever since the 5th century have people understood that simple rhetoric can change the way in which a person acts or behaves. Simply by placing a word, a fragment, or a word sentence, the message of what you're saying can dramatically change. The techniques which was established by the early Greeks are still implemented today by both civil and government facilities. Let's just go into history right now. One of the first important stepping stones in the history of subliminal messages is the whole eat popcorn, drink Coke by James Vasari. Has anyone ever heard of that before?
Yes.
In the 1950s, you have. All right, in the 1950s, this guy, James Vasari.
Definition, man. Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, fuck. just go back.
You and your power.
I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, tell me when to move.
Yeah, you read that.
I ain't reading shit.
All right. Well, first, I got ahead of myself. I'm sorry. Let's define subliminal right now. Subliminal is below the threshold of consciousness perception in the use of stimuli. I'm reading that. Inadequate to produce conscious awareness, but able to evoke response. Subliminal propaganda. Now back to James Vasari. What he did is his marketing firm would produce movies. In the 1957s, they would flash eat popcorn, drink Coke in the movie theaters. And they wrote that after they did that, the sales of Coke and popcorn dramatically increased. And so that sparked a whole, flood of interest of people who went, in the idea of subliminal messaging. That's where we got a love for it. As it turns out, he forged the results, he did do it, but the results were inadequate. They didn't do anything. The fact of the matter is, what most people consider subliminal messages rarely work. For a person to be manipulated, they must first take in the information. If the information is not noticed or taken in, there will be little or no effect. The challenge in creating subliminal media is getting the person to understand the information but not recognize it.
The idea behind subliminal messaging is...
Hey, I'm trying to help here.
It's basically... subliminally, subconsciously, we take in certain cues that's deciphered without us knowing it. You know?
Yes! All right. To liven up a little bit, let's try and do an experiment. Everyone stare at the brightest light that they could see right now and stare there for a couple seconds. And now close your eyes for a second. Okay, does anyone see anything? What?
God does not count.
Yeah.
Not the divine light.
Usually,
people.
If you stare at light or stare at something, and then you close your eyes, there would be an image there. That's called the visual after image. That's a particular similarity. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's go back again, okay? No, fuck, I got it. All right.
We're not even drunk.
That's called a visual after image. One of the ways in which you want to submit media to people is to erase that. There's a visual after image after everything that you see. And then, you move on to the next stimuli, and that erases that. So one of the techniques is masking. There are two ways to cure the problem of the visual after image. The first is presented by presenting the information at such a speed that the next stimuli is presented so quick that the after image gets erased almost immediately. But doing that, you know, would be inserting, you know, a keyframe, however long. In the U.S., we use NTSC for video, which is 29.97 frames per second. Usually, we want to submit someone, if we're using that method, probably about 10 to 15 milliseconds. But doing that, getting that equipment is very expensive and cumbersome and hard to use. So now the next way is masking. And the masking is when, right after the stimuli that you want to show the person, you immediately after that, to erase the visual after image, you put something else. So if you want to show them a picture, then after that picture is shown, you show another picture and leave that picture on longer. So the visual after image for that will erase the first one, but they're still have seen the first picture. Usually you just put like a pattern, you know, like cross-hatching or, you know, just a gray screen and go to the next one. If you're doing words and you want to erase the visual after image of the word, you put more letters but jumbled up, you know, 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, X, Y, Z, you know, right immediately afterwards. So the visual after image that they'll have will be of nonsense and they won't even remember it, but they will have seen the first stimuli. There are two classes of subliminal perception. They're subjective and objective. Subjective is me asking you, did you recognize the word that I just showed you? Yes or no. Objective is me asking you, which of these words do you recognize? Objective awareness provides a lower threshold of consciousness, saying, I recognize that word, but I'm not real familiar why. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, which of these words is more familiar to you? You know, they won't exactly know why it's familiar, but it'll just be more familiar to them. Let's do the Stroop test. All right, we're going to do another test. Here, go back. We need the color, like the red, blue, and all that shit.
Yeah, it's down.
Is that next?
I don't want to click over in it.
Is that the next frame, though?
I think so.
All right, next frame we're going to talk about is...
I don't know PowerPoint.
Is a test. This shows that information receives in different levels and according to each person's, you know, expectancies and consciousness. So I'm going to do a test right now. I want everyone to tell me, as soon as they can, what color they see on the screen. Go. Yell it out.
Blue.
All right. All right, let's know. As soon as you see it, just shout out what color you see. Go.
Ah, you motherfucker said blue.
This shows that we receive different, you know, information at different levels. Some people would say yellow or blue. Some people read before they take in things visually.
And some people
visually.
Yellow and blue.
May make green for this individual up here.
It's greenish yellow.
And some people are colorblind.
It does look
colorblind.
Okay, we're not dwelling on this.
Down.
Am I going too fast?
I think so. Tell me when to change the...
Okay, no, we're good. As we have found earlier in our group exercises, everyone's different just now. These numbers are just a general idea. You know, some people are more susceptible to, you know, subliminal media than others. Some people, you know, as we just saw, take in text better or visuals better. Sometimes, as I just said before, you know, 10 milliseconds, that might not be enough for some people. That might be too long for some people. They might notice that. So it really depends on the individual. It's not, subliminal messages are not brainwashing people. It's very task. It's about getting a person to think or feel a certain way without them knowing why they think or feel this way. It works with very basic emotions. For something, let's say, I could show you a picture and I can make you feel something. I can make you feel thirsty. Or, you know, dehydrated or, you know, hungry. But I can't make you feel thirsty for Coke and not Pepsi. But if I show you a picture that makes you feel real thirsty and then put a Coke, you know, right there on top of it, then you're like, oh, man, that'd be good. I like some Coke right now. You know, you're thirsty. If it said Pepsi, you'd be looking for a Pepsi. You can't make you say, oh, man, Coke's better than Pepsi. This is called semantic priming. Another technique is called semantic priming. This is using one stimuli to produce another. Like, let's say... Here, I'm going to say a word, and I want you to yell out what comes to your mind as soon as you hear this word. Sand.
Yes.
Louder.
Why did you say porn?
Yeah, why did you say porn?
Is there something you're not telling us?
Is there something that's on your mind constantly?
How about porn?
Sand.
There you go.
You You must have some fucked up sexual experiences, man.
Wow.
That didn't work very well.
Nah, I guess that didn't work.
Well, no, okay.
That explains a lot.
You do one.
You ready? Beer. Hamster? Did you just say hamster? And you said porn.
No, that was
hamster porn.
I heard hamster porn.
I heard hamster porn. What I'm trying to explain, I guess, is twisted in everybody, is that everyone's brain is organized differently, and that we have some concepts that are linked to other concepts. Sand and porn. Hamster and porn. Beer and porn. All right? I'm seeing a trend here.
All right. Drunken hamster porn.
This technique is used to faster recognize the intended persuasion. For example, if I presented you with the image that, you know, generally would conjure up another idea or thought in your head, that would be subliminal media. Let's say I show you a picture of someone that's acting totally neutral. You know, you whatever mood you're in now, read his behavior as being that way. If you're happy, oh, that guy's happy. If you're sad, you're sad. Oh, that guy's sad. Or bored, that would be work. But now, if I were to inject, you know, a feeling into some stimuli that I showed you, and then show you the neutral, I could control the way in which you read that person's behavior. If I put something, you know, if I give you something that makes you feel agitated by using sound or words or images, and then I show you a picture of someone acting totally neutral, since you've just been exposed to that previous stimuli, you would read them in that certain way. It's kind of like directing people. Like I said, with subliminal messaging, it's not brainwashing people. You're not like a zombie and go, oh, I must go out and buy this or eat this or do this. It's just kind of leading people on very, very, very basic levels of emotion, kind of leading them a certain way or directing them a certain way. It's not 100% fail-safe. Also is the simple use of repetition to make a person more agreeable. We got a quote here that says, the mere exposure of stimuli enhances one's attitudes towards it. Like, let's just say, in general, people tend to date or marry people who they're around. They tend to marry people from work or who live in their neighborhoods or they know from college or whatever. People tend to listen to music that is popularly played on the radio over and over. Oh, I like this song's hot. You know, it's in the clubs and everywhere. People tend to buy clothes and shoes that are, you know, advertised all the time on TV. It just the mere exposure of, you know, over and over and over kind of like wears you down. While the effectiveness of subliminal advertising is widely debated, it sparked enough interest for 26 U.S. patents to be taken out on it. And we through the Freedom of Information Act, we received several, you know, documents from the FCC, the Department of Defense, and the CIA saying different facts. The FCC says, we believe that the use of subliminal perception is inconsistent with the obligations of a broadcast license, and therefore we take this occasion to make it clear that broadcasts employing such techniques are contrary to the public interest. So technically it's illegal, but it's also a fine line between subliminal messaging and really good advertising. And then, you know, as I just said before, the papers I will show you soon, you know, major departments of the government, the DOD, Department of Defense, you know, CIA and NSA all have long studies in the subliminal perception, you know, ever since back in the 50s when James Vicari first came out with his things. So you can go now.
Actually, Xanax is up next with military and government uses of subliminal messaging.
Okay, pretty much what I'm going to do is just read certain examples throughout history of how what is called PSYOP, which is psychological operations used in war. It's some of it's subliminal. Most of it's just playing mind games on the enemy. Like what Alexander the Great did. After each battle, he had his armory leave behind oversized helmets and breastplates, thinking that, you know, he had giants working for him, especially back in that day when not many people were around, you know, around the world, making sure there weren't giants, well, which there are.
He's one. Beware of the giants.
Beware of the giants.
The enormous breastplates.
They might be
yes.
Giants.
Then there was Genghis Khan, who would send people, who we called agents of influence, to opposition and just start telling them stories about how barbaric his fighting style is, being Mongolian. And also what he would do is move his forces using a rapid troop movement technique to make it seem like he had a lot more forces going into one place than he really did. Now, for World War II, like, there was a whole lot of different ones. Like, when Adolf Hitler, he would use flawless speaking techniques, which I don't have, and to present his hate-filled propaganda. But also what he would also do is use high-pitched sounds and squeals in the background to make his audience agitated over the topic that he was talking about.
To rile up the audience and get them pumped up at the same time. You know, they didn't exactly know why they're getting pumped up. You know, they thought they were getting pumped up because of his great speech, when actually he's using a little bit extra, you know, techniques just to get them riled up. Mm-hmm.
It'd be a very powerful speaker to convince one race to annihilate another.
Mm-hmm. So he had to use some little bit of a, you know, whatever.
I feel a lot of hate now in the room. Is this right? No.
Yes.
Okay, thought so. Good.
Come in from over here.
Okay, I'm not going to have shit thrown at my head next, am I?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Continue.
Thanks. Now,
damn.
I keep going.
Okay, Great Britain, what they did was they heard rumors circulating that Germany was going to invade them through this English Channel. So what they did says, okay, fine, we're going to probably be invaded. Maybe we should try something to do with this. So they knew parts of Germany was listening on parts of the BBC. So what they did was they started giving out German lessons throughout the BBC, and they started using phrases like, the boat is sinking, the water is very cold, and we are all on fire in German. Now, what the Soviet Union did was more of a patriotic approach. What Joseph Stalin would do, he would use phrases such as Mother Russia and Holy Russia, referring to his country, as opposed to just saying Russia or the Soviet Union, if that's what it was called when he was in power. And Soviet newspapers would use, they started trading off Marxist mottos, such as, like, workers of the world unite, which was the biggest Marxist thing, and to, like, kill the German opposition. Now, the current war effort. During Operation Enduring Freedom, the U.S. dropped leaflets on Afghanistan depicting Osama bin Laden wearing a business suit with no beard in pure capitalistic form, which would probably rile up Afghanistan people who were...
They would basically be like, he sold out, he went American.
Yeah. Just to push him out. What is this here? Okay. And now in the U.S. conquest for oil, vengeance for 9/11, to free the Iraqi people from Saddam Hussein, the evil dictator, the U.S. is offering an information service called Information Radio to let the Iraqi people know what to do if their village is attacked. So they let you know, please, you know, go along with everything, fine. But also, what they are actually using is subliminal messaging, from what our research shows, and just real quietly putting, like, Saddam is dead, follow us, you know, it's pointless to resist.
I've actually, yeah, that's...
God loves everyone.
Dark Cube is gay. 360.
Yeah,
What? Actually, I've listened to it and gotten it translated. They're basically saying that Saddam Hussein is dead and they're looking for his sons and whatnot. But if you listen to it really faint in the background, you can hear Saddam is dead and, you know, fight Saddam and kill Whitey, you know, crazy stuff like that.
Kill Whitey, yet love the U.S. Okay. And that's all on my part.
Going to this civil aspect now.
Yeah, here's my very unplanned speech. In order for the message to be delivered subconsciously, it needs to be hidden. It can be flashed, like as we said, like flashed on the screen, delivered backwards through some music or whatnot, you know, all that stuff. The goal of subliminal media is to make someone do something implanted into their subconscious mind, of course. they're not going to do it if they, like, the stuff that you're hearing or you're seeing above is not entering you subconsciously. It's just something that we threw up there to kind of. What's actually, it has to be delivered to your subconscious mind to be actually subliminal. It could be. Okay.
And in that book, he details attending a football game where passed out before the football game were signs that said, like, sack attack or something. The crowd pulled up whenever a sack was made. On the back of the sign was printed an advertisement for a steakhouse. And the assertion that he made through that example was that the message was not taken at all, but the message was planted.
That's more of a propaganda thing, also.
If you've ever heard John Lennon's song "Imagine," it's basically a theme song for socialism. If you read the lyrics at all, it's describing socialism perfectly. It's like making people think, "Oh, this is the way this world should be," and then it's socialistic ideas.
In your example, as I said before. Important thing is to deliver a message to a person. They have to accept it in. I can take a message and reverse it and put down so low that you could hear it and you will never hear it. If you don't actually hear it, then it doesn't get across. You have to hear it. The point is delivering a message to someone without exactly getting them to realize that they're getting a message. By putting something on the back, they're seeing it all the time, but they're not saying, "Oh, I'm being subjected to advertising right now." It's just there. They're holding up the sign. They're thinking, go sack, or the guy just got sacked, and they're not realizing that they're being exposed to this right now. So yeah, that in a sense, that's delivering a message to them without them exactly realizing. The focus isn't on the advertising. The focus is on the football, game of them getting sacked.
He noted afterwards how ironic it was that the person that he saw the game with said.
Steak
advertised
on the back, some kind of restaurant, right?
Attack a football player, eat a steak. Perfect.
We'll actually get into that. I have a couple songs from I found online, and we're reversing them, and we'll show you what they say.
It's an unproven theory that the subconscious mind will pick up reverse messaging called backmasking to music.
Actually, we have an announcement from.
Jim just asked me to tell everybody that the hotel is currently really pissed off ass right now about the smoking situation. If you're not in a designated smoking area, please put your cigarette out right now. If they see you, you're ejected from the hotel ASAP by security. So put your cigarettes out. Yes, exactly. I mean, we're setting up examples. So guys, put it out or rejected.
It's like more smoke than like.
And we sell gum to freshen breath just in case they come down that hard.
So watch where you're smoking, people. Find out if it's a designated area or not, okay?
Man, put this out. They're coming here and inject us all. We won't get through the speech.
What the fuck is that?
Sleep in the limo.
High under that smoke detector. It'll be fine.
But
we talked about the famous experiment. Hungry, eat popcorn. Thirsty, drink Coke. The results, an increase in popcorn and Coke sales, but flaws, no control group of subjects was provided. Maybe they were just really hungry and thirsty that day. No one knows. Nothing was really proven from this. But basically, the media took it to extents that, we got a scare or whatever. We'll talk about the subliminal message scare of the 1980s. Musical groups and companies were accused of implementing subliminal messages in media during this time. We're going to show a couple of examples now. I don't know what that was. Somebody hacked Nick hacked my machine.
Woo.
That's in the zero day. Who notices the subliminal message in here? Oh, shit.
All right. If you have any questionable material that a dog might be able to pick up, you may want to get it out of the hotel, too. All right. We have reason to believe they're bringing in dogs pretty quick.
Just get up and get it out. Now. Flush it. Like, okay.
I have
who
to
knows
go call
is the subliminal message here? Anyone? Other than the one flashing.
Does anyone see anything, a message in this?
Bottles are icy. It's sex.
Correct.
Sometimes companies will play on our... Sometimes companies will play on our EverQuest for sex and stimulate us subconsciously into buying their gin.
In the glass, you see it said SEX, nice news, can you go back? In the glass?
A little bit of Photoshop.
SEX. Does everyone see that?
Can you see it now?
Alright.
Even in Disney movies, some of you may have known about this.
It says sex.
It's like half the people left after that announcement. And who notices the image in this?
The naked lady in the back window.
Oh, okay.
Right. That was actually in the U.S. video release. It was actually a practical joke by some of the people. It got pulled. Obviously. It was actually a housewife that noticed that when she was watching with her small children.
I bet. She was all like...
It was him.
Tipper Gore. Now we're gonna play the you may have heard of it, the Rats video during Bush's campaign for presidency.
Dictator.
Before we play, this was actually a commercial airing when he was, you know, kind of it was one of those like slander commercials against his opponent.
George Bush has a plan. Add a prescription drug benefit to Medicare.
Every senior will have access to prescription drug benefits.
And Al Gore? Gore opposed bipartisan reform. He's pushing a big government plan that lets Washington bureaucrats interfere with what your doctors prescribe. The Gore prescription plan? Bureaucrats decide. The Bush prescription plan? Seniors choose.
Who caught the subliminal message? That didn't know about it before.
This commercial actually is what sparked a whole string of FCC debates and letters, and was actually when the quote that I just read, that's when that quote came out of this. The you have a question? Well, I mean, like I said before, it depends on the person. I'm not saying that everyone here all of a sudden thinks, oh, they're rats, but...
No one caught it.
The intent of this commercial was to slander his opposition. And by sneaking little tricks like this in, whether you catch it or you not, or whether you catch it and you know it, or you catch it and you don't know it, you're still going to get the message that, you know, oh, these guys, you know, they're no good, they're rats, you know. Because the content of this is directed in a way, and this just adds to that.
And plus, if this was ran, like, over and over again, every other hour, as our commercials are ran, you would begin to see it over and over again. It would be implanted into your subconscious. Good thing they caught it.
but it didn't stop him from being reelected.
They actually after the FCC came out and made their statements, they wrote letters to all the people, all the television companies that were broadcasting that. It got pulled. They had to send it back, and that flame was actually spliced out of it.
Right now I'm going to play some audio examples. These range from audio from the BBC back in the day, doing some propaganda or whatnot.
Some of these are, kind of subjective. Some of these are pretty obvious. Some of these is kind of a far stretch.
And some are really lame.
Yeah, some, it's a stretch.
First, I'm going to start with G.I. Joe. Who watched G.I. Joe back in the day? Everybody watched G.I. Joe back in the day. But did you know you were subjected to subliminal messaging while watching G.I. Joe?
Yes.
I didn't.
Okay. I didn't either. What? I don't know which one's which. All right. Either you're going to hear it frontwards or backwards.
By using the chant, we might be able to lure it away from Cobra Island and into a deep sea trench.
Well, you know us. Anything for a laugh. Let's give it a try.
Have you with Pali, Rosie, and yes, and talk after it's off. So, absolutely, and silly, I mean.
That was supposedly his chant or whatnot. When we play it back, this was actually during the scare in the 80s of subliminal messaging, and this is one of those lame examples. We're going to see it play backwards, and you might be able to catch it. It's kind of sketchy.
Anybody listening to this backwards, our secret occult message is a real dweeb.
Basically, the G.I. Joe creators were making fun of the whole 1980s scare on subliminal messaging. Who didn't catch it? Everybody caught it.
And we could afford that nice, rewinding, playing backward stuff back in the 80s. We could actually afford that to understand that when we were 5 years old.
This is from the BBC.
We caught it.
It's kind of lame, but here it is. This is back in the day. I, ripped this from some site. I didn't really test it out. Here we go.
Put on your earphones, tune on your head, listen in half past three. Sit well back, we're going to have a crack from Anti-Aggie of the BBC.
This is not a noose. No, it's really not. Basically meaning, we're not going to kill you. We're not going to kill you. Just watch us. I don't know the background. I didn't save the rest of the HTML file. Who did another one bites of the... Who did another one bites of the... Queen. Okay. I don't listen to this music, so... Another One Bites the Dust has a subliminal message in it, supposedly. And here it is.
Another one bites the dust! Another one bites the dust! Ow! Another one bites the dust! Hey, hey! Another one bites the dust!
I like this one.
It's fun to smoke marijuana. So I hear. Now this one is the Judas Priest song that supposedly during the 80s, a teenager, I guess in Texas, I think it was, killed himself over this song. Said that he was, the parents tried to make a lawsuit about it. I don't know if they won or not. I didn't research it that much, but here's the example.
Yeah!
Who got that one? I'm not playing it again. It says, I took my life. Pokemon, who thinks it's an evil creation of the Lord Satan? Here I'm proving it is.
I'm unbiased.
I got a pocket. Who got that one? Hail Satan, hail Satan. Hail Satan, hail Satan. I'll play it one more time. Actually, I think it's old Satan, old Satan.
It's kind of a stretch, but it all depends on how you interpret it.
Sometimes people listen for what they think is in it.
Now, Tapa, when he opens a can of beer, it's kind of like Popeye the Sailor Man. It gives him extra energy and, yeah. It's like spinach. Here we prove the theme song has some subliminal messaging in it.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm so into spinach cause I eat big spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
Backwards, it says, give me a fuck. There's a little bit of gibberish followed by, give me a fuck now.
Yes, yes, now.
Yeah, Popeye.
Who has kids in here? Admit it. Couple people do. The nursery rhyme or whatever, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, is fucked up. And I would never sing it to my kid. I would never sing it, period.
You sung it to me.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. I wish I wonder where I was.
I'll play it one more time and see if you can get it.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. I wish I wonder where I was.
Who gets it? I wish there were no Allah, another word for God.
There's many more.
I'll play it one more time for you.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. I wish I wonder where I was.
There's many more musical examples of backmasking. One of them would be Electric Light Orchestra's song El Dorado. Forward, they sing I'll Sail Away on a Voyage No Return just to see if eternal life is meant to be. Backwards, it's, what was it?
I don't know what this kid's talking about.
Hey, I'm trying to give some questions.
Also,
we made this video, by the way. We have the trial version because we don't pirate software. Like right now? We have 10 minutes left. We got this from the Canada Broadcasting Corporation or something. We're going to end with this. It talks about. Did someone run up here because I'm too lazy and dim these lights? We'll just play it.
When it's good, it's about a dream coming true, not reality hitting you in the face.
Kathy Denson lives to shop.
You have to just start parting the waters and having a look at everything. That I like. It's a hunt. It's like a little safari. I don't know what's out there.
For people like Kathy, the marketplace is a jungle to be conquered.
Oh, so here we are. Oh.
I'm along to watch her cut a swath through a store.
Good, we'll take that.
For corporations who want to sell us stuff, it's the shopper's mind that's the jungle. A territory to be mapped.
How you doing, Sydney?
Fine.
Wonderful. Okay, we'd like to take a high-resolution picture of your brain now, an anatomical picture.
For decades, marketers have been trying to understand why we choose one product over another. Now, in the latest attempt to get inside our heads, researchers here in Atlanta are using MRIs to scan people's brains. It sounds like science fiction, but it's called neuromarketing.
She's actually looking at a series of 20 photographs. Each one is on the screen for 5 seconds. Depending on his preference for the item that's being shown in the photograph, activity in the brain will either increase or decrease. Probably not just in one area, but lots of areas. Okay, Sydney, that completes our scan.
Sydney is paid to literally have his brain picked. Yellow indicates the pictures he likes, blue for the ones he dislikes.
My favorite image, I liked some of the cars. There was one of a Porsche that I liked a lot. I suppose that when you do this, it could detect something that I don't, I guess, consciously know that I think or feel. So,
the company behind this cutting-edge research is the Bright House Institute for Thought Sciences. Bright House claims it's closing the gap between business and science with the goal of getting us to behave the way corporations want us to. Executive Adam Covell.
What it really does is give unprecedented insight into the consumer mind and will actually result in higher product sales or in brand preference or in getting customers to behave the way they want them to behave.
Covell's company is trying to find out what we like and want subconsciously.
Shopping is pleasure. I think it's the possibility of something new. It's the possibility of putting something on that makes you different or makes you better.
I look like a movie star.
Definitely. You have to have an attitude when you wear a coat like that, though.
Yeah, we can get one of those. See, that's the kind of thing that I don't need it, but I want it.
Is that what shopping is all about?
Sometimes, really.
That's exactly what neuromarketers want to do, strengthen our emotional bonds with products.
So Forever Young is however you old you are with your Diet Pepsi.
Advertising veteran Alan Middleton teaches marketing at York University. He says neuromarketing is in its early stages, and he's skeptical about what it can do. But
theoretically, if you could possibly not only understand how people respond in a laboratory situation to a buying stimulus, so much so they go out and buy the product, then it will certainly help marketers forecast behavior. Well, if it works, you get to 1984, and more importantly, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World.
Middleton doesn't think there's one magic technique or image that will compel us to buy something. The reason? There are so many products and messages competing for our attention. Still, neuromarketing is attracting some corporations with big bucks.
We can't actually talk about the specific names of the companies, but they're global consumer product companies.
Can you give me an example of how corporations are starting to apply this?
Right now, they'd rather not be exposed. We've been kind of running under the radar with a lot of the breakthrough technology.
The possibility that neuromarketing may work and work well troubles Toronto psychologist Will Kupchick. He treats a growing number of people with shopping disorders. We showed him the neuromarketing experiment.
The potential for good and the potential for ill are both huge here. I don't know what we will call brainwashing, but until we come up with a better term, I would suggest that it's at least a kissing cousin.
That's completely unfounded. It really is about understanding consumer thought. It has nothing to do with controlling consumer thought. It has nothing to do with manipulating consumer thought. All we can do is observe and learn.
Marketers have been studying consumers for decades. Why is it so important that they probe the subconscious mind of consumers?
It'll make the ad that much more effective. I'm not interested in whether or not you like my ad. I'm interested in whether or not it's effective in helping you either buy or become more loyal to my brand.
But back in the jungle of the marketplace, Kathy isn't looking for a brand. She's hunting for something to transform herself.
What about this? That I like. Orange, sparkly. Oh, yeah.
What does that say to you?
Party.
Party?
Yep.
Who would you be if you wore this at a party?
I'd be me. That's me, because I'm a bit of a party girl, and I would just be the party side of me, and that would
the
make
party
me,
side of you.
Yeah.
Marketers have been observing us for decades, sharpening their persuasive techniques.
And brought to you by Ever Ready Flashlight Batteries.
In response, advertising has progressed from naive and stiff attempts to sell us stuff to a sophisticated and cunning connection to our innermost desires and fears.
Comfortably, quietly, efficiently.
Marketers have used everything from focus groups and dream therapy to skin tests. Using science to map the unconscious mind of consumers is the latest trick, and it has some Ivy League backing. Neuromarketing was born here at Harvard University. In the late 1990s, marketing professor Jerry Zaltman and his associate began scanning people's brains for corporations. He stopped that work now, and he's concentrating on another method to probe the subconscious mind of consumers.
Have you ever felt fulfilled with diet or low-calorie foods?
I don't think so.
Jerry Zaltman leads Alana, a paid research subject, through one of his probing interviews, this one on diet food. Along with neuromarketing, Zaltman has patented this technique called ZMET, which uses pictures to help uncover deeply held thoughts and the metaphors they trigger.
And so you're depriving yourself of taste and enjoyment. And these clouds, they could be beautiful, but they're not because they're bland.
95% or more of all cognition, all thinking, including emotion, occurs below levels of awareness. So the big challenge is, how do we surface what's going on in the unconscious?
Yeah. I guess this is me, looking out through the money, and the feeling here is one of being fooled or being manipulated by money. No, being manipulated by the corporations or institutions that want me to buy low-calorie foods.
Now, metaphors are especially powerful because they tap into the unconscious mind. And they want to say, Alana, what's the story behind this image?
With Zaltman's help, Alana creates a digital collage of the images that represent her conflicting views about diet food and a story to go with it.
Do you have anything with, like, green grass? I don't want to eat low-calorie foods because I don't like them and they have no flavor, just as the grass that I'm standing on has no color, but that I might do it anyway because I'm supposed to or because people are telling me that I should. There are things that I would rather be doing or rather be eating, like the grass is greener. My husband and son are there. And I can't get to them. There's something dividing us.
So how would a corporation use this?
A company might well think about what are healthy diet-like foods that are natural, and market those as healthy diet foods. They would be overcoming a major obstacle, the obstacle of unnatural.
Zaltman says one of the most common metaphors is transformation. We want to change ourselves from one state to another. Harried to calm, fat to thin.
If you buy something that makes you look really good, then like anybody, that's going to make you happy. If you buy something your husband's going to think you look sexy in, then you'll feel like you did it for him, and so there's a little bit of philanthropy going on there.
Zaltman's tech.
Well, we gotta go, so, and we're about out of time.
Before we leave, are there any questions? We just
just wanted to show that clip because that came out probably about a month ago. So that's the newest stuff that's coming out right now. It'll actually map your brain and in general realize what stimuli produces what thoughts in your brain. And so it's a more effective, more thorough way of doing subliminal media. Are there any questions? Yes.
Absolutely not.
No, not at all.
And this is just proof we had the packet.
We would never do such
before it was there.